Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Just seconds ago, Timory, as I was scrolling through one of my many social media feeds in preparation for the show, I saw a depressing image come across, and it's basically an image with a bunch of stats on it. So let me walk you through some of these. 33% of high school graduates never read another book the rest of their lives. A third of the population. Then it's a little arrow that goes over and says 42% of college graduates never read another book after college. 57% of new books are not read to completion. 70% of U.S. adults have not been in a bookstore in the last 5 years. And you're like, all right, maybe they're ordering on Amazon. I don't know. This one does not seem to indicate that. 80% of U.S. families did not buy or read a book last year. How is that possible? Now, admittedly, I did not go and find where all this research is coming from. And, you know, maybe these stats are a little bit off. But instinctively, I feel like there's a lot of truth here, probably. I know that as an author, it's difficult to sell books, and that even the best authors actually aren't selling that many. I mean, there's the big ones. There's the Harry Potters. I get that. But really, I mean, most authors, that's not something that you're going to make a living on, because there's just not that many books being sold. Mm-hmm. This seems to indicate that my inclinations are correct, that there's just not a lot of reading going on.
You know, when you were saying this, you were slowly like, I could tell you're reading something sad. And then you looked at me and before the show and you said, do you think this is real? Like, it literally touched your heart that this was happening. And this is coming from people who, I think our lives were transformed by reading. And reading is something that you and I both often discuss on the show because it's such a fundamental part of the human person. It's uniting body and soul in that moment to learn, whether it's the imagination creating, or it's the imagination trying to understand, or whether it's you trying to tackle and critically think and work through something you agree or disagree with. And, you know, I hear people when they'll write in after we do shows where we talk about books, and I can't tell you how often people have said, yeah, when I read the series, not that I was escaping from the world, but it helped me during a specific time in life where maybe I was a little more lonely, or I was going through something really difficult, and it kind of created this body-mind unity, right, of helping me to get through some tough parts in life and learn something about the heroes of other stories.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things that reading accomplishes that it's not possible to accomplish in any other realm of life. I think that's what you're... I mean, you talked about a few of them, right? Like, just getting into the perspective of another person in a way, when you read their words, I mean, that's just not doable any other way. Even if they're telling you their perspective, when they write it, that's a different deal. Or wrestling with concepts. You can't wrestle with concepts, with big ideas, in a movie, for example, in the same way that you can in a book. It's just, it's literally not possible. You can't, it can't be done. You can't emotionally connect with people. I mean, there's just so many things. You can't think in the same way that you're missing by not reading books. And you're right. I mean, part of it is our personality, Timory. We're similar in that, really, you're right. Books have changed my life in so many ways. I think of the big pivotal moments in my life, you know, the various conversions that I've had during life, you know, whether it's religious or not, just ideas or the way I've changed my life or what I've chosen to focus on. I mean, the most influential people in my life, no doubt, other than my parents, authors. You know, it's not like I had that, you know, youth group leader or whatever. I don't mean to denigrate youth group leaders. No, it's never been those people. It's been authors, maybe old authors, right? Like hundreds of years ago they wrote, but they changed my life today. And so, yeah, to think that, you know, 80%, I'm still not believing that. Maybe, hopefully that's not true. 80% of families didn't buy or read a book.
Well, yikes. When you're saying that too, I think about it, and I say this often, the people who have influenced me most have either been speakers I have heard in person person because I was very blessed. You know, my mom working within the diocese and for the pro-life office, I got to go to incredible bioethics conferences, legal conferences on, you know, human life and all these things. And that changed my life along with reading. And I think we're so actively participating in movies, video games, when we think it's an activity, it's also just instead this moment of just receiving something and not really being involved.
Yeah, it's very passive. That's true. Like watching a movie is a very passive experience. It creates emotions in you. Yes, hopefully it makes you think a little bit, but generally it's just creating an emotion. Whereas reading is a two-way street. It's an interaction of you with at least one other person, maybe many other people. And as a guy who's thought a lot about educating, right? I'm a homeschooler. I'm a little bit against the mainstream where we don't necessarily make sure. I mean, yes, our kids have academically strident, they do all the subjects, but I'm just saying it's not going to kill me if, you know, one of my kids doesn't do as well in a particular year of science or whatever. But you know what they're going to do? Guaranteed? They're going to be able to read. They're going to be able to read a lot, because when you can read, all of that other stuff can be taken care of. Okay, you can figure out the science because you can read about it. You can figure out people if you can read about it. If you can't read, you're blocking off whole realms of existence that as you grow up, I mean, you're never going to get that job because you can't read, okay, or whatever it is you think is important. If you're not a reader, you're not going to do those things. So.
Well, and a testament to this, as you're saying this, it makes me think I have a hard time with, like, memorization, like getting really specific dates and facts set in stone. People may disagree, but I really don't think that I am good at that. But I know how to find them. I know how to turn back to them over and over again, even coming from a biblical perspective. You know, I hear people who can shoot off Bible verses. I can tell you generally where things are. I can summarize things well. I can help point you pretty particularly to places. But I don't have that quick memory. But reading teaches you the skills to get through life in many areas so that you can still learn and continue to creatively think and interact.
Speaking of creative, this has just popped in mind. You know why there's such bad stories coming out of Hollywood these days? Like, the stories are generally pretty terrible. Because the writers haven't read books. They've only watched TV or watched movies. And if you want to be creative in your future, you have to be able to read stories. And part of that, just logistically how that works, is you have to be able to have enough attention span to think through a plot. And you know what reading does? It increases your attention span.
Right.
If you're just scrolling social media all day, and listen, I got this story from social media. Okay. I'm not anti-social media, but your attention span, I know my attention span decreases the more social media I have.
Or the more I have my phone nearby, I have a hard time, even if it's not buzzing. Cause I actually, unless I'm totally available, I always have my phone on silent. Like, even if I get a text message, it doesn't vibrate. It's only if a call comes through. I'll put my phone on do not disturb all the time because it's helpful for me to stay focused, whether I'm reading, just reading an article. Otherwise, it's total distraction for me of being present in that moment.
Yeah, if you're looking for New Year's resolutions, please buy a book and read one. Now, listen, and here I am. You know, one of the reasons people ask me, like, Don, how'd you become a filmmaker? And realistically, here's how it happened. I wrote books before, and, you know, maybe they're not great books. I get it. But also, people just don't buy and read a lot of books anymore, no matter how good they are. So I said, well, you know what they do is they watch movies. So I'm a movie maker. I'm not saying don't watch the movies. I'm a movie maker, all right? I get it. I get that you're not going to go cold turkey on the social media or whatever. But along with the film watching, and there actually is some good storytelling happening in certain areas, but please, for the love of God, read some books.
And I think on that note, though, you know, one of the stories we brought up for today, as we're talking about, you know, where people are starting to apply to colleges, maybe they're anticipating what colleges they've gotten into, maybe it's a New Year's resolution, whatever it might be, I was reading this article, Don, and I was looking at this physician who's been practicing for over 30 years. He's a practicing physician and also a psychologist as well. And he sees a lot of little boys, young men, and he was talking about how just across the board, there's a lack of performance among young men in academia. Just back in 2016, for example, in Boston, 42 public high schools, out of those 42, 30 of the valedictorians were girls and only 12 were boys. This is a trend we're seeing across the country in academia and even just in general, many boys, it's very rare for them to get A's in school even.
Yeah, absolutely. Psychology Today is where we found this article, a very highly respected physician and psychologist. And it's clear, I mean, across the board that intellectually, as far as academic achievement, girls are excelling in almost every way compared to boys. How much of this, I just want to throw this out there, how much of this is simply we've told girls for the past 50 years now, this is what my movie's about, by the way, we've told girls for the past 50 years that in order for you to be happy and fulfilled, you have to get the career, and in order to get the career, you have to get the academic things. We haven't told boys that. I don't know, frankly, what we've told boys during that time, and this is what makes me wonder, like, well, what are we telling boys? Like, what do you need to do, boy, to be happy and successful? I think what they've been hearing, whether or not we've been telling it explicitly, is have a lot of sex, make enough money that you can have some toys, get married? No. Have kids? No. None of that stuff.
Not necessarily. We don't even talk about it.
No, be the kind of person that a woman might want to marry. No, none of that stuff. And so I think part of this is just what message have we been telling boys and girls? We've been telling girls for 50 years, yeah, you do need to go get the high academics, get the career, make the money, because you don't need the boys. What have we been telling the boys? And we'll have to talk more about this after the break. We've been telling the boys, frankly, not much of anything. Stay distracted, have sex, whatever. Why would they be motivated, I feel like, given the message that we've been telling them?
From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So there was this story in Psychology Today where it talked about this doctor, physician, and psychologist who was traveling around to some schools, and he heard about this 10th grade boy in an English class recently who, in his writing class, was asked to write a story. And so he wrote a story about a battle that took place back in 1942 about a Russian soldier who was patrolling and was ambushed by a German soldier. What the young man then did is he told a story about what happened when the German soldier shot the Russian soldier in the face, point blank. And he talks about eyeballs flinging, the head exploding, and all these different images. Very graphic in many ways. Well, what happened is this poor 10th grader ends up being suspended from school. He needs to go through basically psychological analysis to see if he's fit and safe to be in school. But what was interesting is a psychologist actually came out and said it reminded him of a story he wrote back in 1977, for which in his creative writing class, he was actually chosen to be a lead person nominated for a competition in creative writing, someone chosen by teachers. And he ended up winning. And he said, actually, just a few years ago, he found that certificate from having participated after his mom had died. It was something she had saved. And that was a story he wrote about. His story was very similar. It was gruesome, describing death. It was talking about a battle.
Yeah, a very realistic depiction of battle. And here we have, I think, the nature of genders clashing up against some of the ideas that we've had in our culture, one of which I talked about before the break. One of the ideas we've been pushing is that for women to be happy and content and successful, they need to downplay and overcome their fertility and instead gain high academics and get a career and make a lot of money and do all that stuff. Then you'll be happy. And they've been doing it. I mean, yes, right. Women have been excelling at school. While they've been doing that, they have shaped academia a little bit to their own nature. I mean, we were trying to overcome a little bit of the feminine nature there as far as fertility and stuff, but you can't kill nature all the way.
Well, in the meantime, we're punishing young men in creative writing. And even if you think about this, the kid was talking about what happens if you shoot someone in the face. He was talking about reality, what happens. And I was even thinking about this kid was punished for talking about something that was real, something that he might even experience or interact in. Maybe he's going to join, you know, some form of armed service.
Was he glorying in it? He making it a great, I don't think that didn't strike me that he was doing that. He was just saying this is what happens.
And we were talking about reading earlier. When you write, you bring the emotional part of the brain, you bring the reason side of the brain. He learns as he's writing. And it sounds that in the moment it was pretty objective, just telling this story, but subjectively they begin to understand things, even just like the consequences of shooting someone as they're writing. In fact, is actually being shut down. The nature of a boy to understand and be able to handle maybe more gruesome, violent things was being shut down, almost punished for even thinking about it.
Maybe I missed this in the story, but why exactly was he punished? Like, what was the problem with the story?
It didn't go into detail. It just meant he was punished for having written the story. That was the issue.
Like, because you can't talk about brains explode, I guess, or what? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, you're seeing also in kindergarten this no tolerance policy. Kids have been expelled for drawing pictures of a pirate chopping off the head of another person, or for a depiction via picture of cowboys and Indians. I mean, this is the environment that little boys are having to grow up in, and then they get into high school and they're being punished. And this is where, in a culture right now where it's so anti-male, it's not bad to talk about things, versus when they are talking about something or writing or using part of their brain, they're immediately considered, well, you're unsafe because you're speaking of something violent.
I'm just trying to figure out who exactly thinks that it's bad to talk about brains blowing up. Am I wrong in saying that that's more of a feminine thing? I don't want to see that, or I don't want to see reality, or like, what is it about the educational system now that would say no? We're so scared of violence? Is that we think this is going to... I don't know. I just think there's something strange going on there. And certainly, I mean, he makes the point, it certainly isn't friendly to boys in many ways. I would suggest that one of the reasons boys like war stories is that they like to be courageous. And that in the past, we would have celebrated courage. And we would have even called it manliness, right? Oh, my goodness, what? Not that we wouldn't celebrate courage in a woman, right? Like Joan of Arc, I mean, right? It's not that. But what we told young boys to be and to do was someone who is out there risking your life, being courageous, protecting the damsel in distress, right? Like doing these things that are part of a boy's nature. For the past several decades now, we've been saying, no, we can't do that. And what's a boy to do now?
Right. We're shutting down the idea of doing extraordinary things. You know, I always think of that quote by Pope Benedict where he says, the world is offering you comfort. You are not made for comfort. You were made for greatness. You were made to be extraordinary. I was speaking at a conference recently, and I was with a bunch of young adults, and I looked at them. I said, man, like, I was in Silicon Valley, and I'm saying, what extraordinary things are you doing with your life? And it doesn't have to be that you are creating the most innovative thing right now, right, in the jewel of California and Silicon Valley, the most innovative place, but is who you are extraordinary, or is it just ordinary? Are we choosing to step down the comfortable path? And I think right now, the way we are building a culture, we're telling boys, don't do anything extraordinary, like face war, face the challenges of protecting someone. Don't do anything extraordinary like doing good grades, because you're going to be punished for being creative, or even just for talking through things that you might be thinking about.
Well, and there's a couple of things with the good grades, because he is sort of trying to, in this article from Psychology Today, this guy's trying to figure out why boys aren't motivated to get the good grades that girls are motivated for. And I think you just touched on something. Maybe boys understand that, one, I'm not wired in a way that I'm going to get graded in the same way that the girls are, right? Like, we've set up the educational system where, well, where do you get an A? To write a certain kind of story or to do particular kinds of tasks in school that boys, frankly, aren't as good at. They're not as good as probably talking about their feelings. They're better at talking about war stories. So we are sort of anti-male that way. But also, I would throw this out there. The boys look at the world around them and they say, well, what exactly is the path that you want me to go down? You're telling me that I'm supposed to get good grades for what? Well, so you can get a good job. For what? In the past, it would have been get good grades so you can get a good job so you can get married and build a family and provide for your wife and family. Now, that's not told to the kids. In fact, they look around them and say, gee, most of the women I know are making more money than me. I certainly don't need to provide for them.
Right.
They're getting better grades than me. What am I supposed to do with that? What exactly am I purpose here? Like, what's the point of getting good grades? I don't see it. Why don't I just get good enough grades that I can buy some beer on the weekends, play my video games, which he talks about down here a little
bit.
Right? I mean, they're looking at that message and saying, I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing I should get the grades.
Where's my place? Where is my purpose? Where is my extraordinary purpose? Where am I being called? But that's why, you know, Dr. Sachs here is talking about how essentially now it used to be that he would hear kids, young boys, boasting about their achievements in track and field and the different sports. Now, do you want to know what he hears boys, young boys, boasting about? Their latest game that they conquered in Grand Theft Auto or all of these different video games. And what's happening is boys are losing what is effective, what is accomplishing something. You know, they're taking that same desire in many ways for seeing the placement somehow of violence in a society. Not that they're seeking after it, but instead of talking it out and trying to understand it, instead they're just taking it and participating in a video game that is somewhat passive, somewhat active, and in fact we're at the point where people are having a hard time determining versus what is real and unreal because they're spending so much time on the video games.
Yeah, the sense of accomplishment. He talks about boys needing a sense of accomplishment and finishing something. They can get that. Here's what I think. They can get that from those video games. Hey, I reached level 6,000 or whatever it is, and I beat whatever. In the past, that wouldn't have been as effective, I think, primarily for this reason. They would do things not only for their own self-gratification, if you will, their own sense of accomplishment, but so that other people around them could see it, particularly young ladies, okay? Mm-hmm. They would be out there at least partially to impress young ladies enough that the young lady would be attracted to them, and so that we could get a life together so that also I could get sex, for one thing. But also a bigger sense of accomplishment. Frankly, I mean, but that's all been taken from boys, and now they can get that. They're like, that's not going to get me anything out there. I'll just do it in video games.
This is such an important point, though, that sense of purpose, that sense of responsibility. At the heart of our culture is the family. As we're seeing the family breakdown, we're also seeing the breakdown of masculinity and femininity.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E and at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Dawn and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Continuing our discussion on boys and their lack of motivation to get good grades in school. They're being surpassed on basically every level by women, whether it's the amount of women in school, the amount of women getting graduate degrees, the grades that women are getting, all of them, they're doing much better than boys. And in Psychology Today, we have a psychologist and physician who is talking about some of the reasons behind that. And we have expanded on some of those. One that he brings up here near the end is pornography. And this is really related, I think, to the other ones we talked about, where I have really pointed back to the separation of sex from marriage, sex from childbearing, all of that. The breakdown of the family, the breakdown of marriage has, of course, been devastating to women and children, but it's also been devastating to men. And it has provided them a lack of motivation to do some of the things that traditionally in our society they would do.
I'm going to argue that this has been more devastating for men in some ways because women are going out and seeking other forms of fertility. Women are the ones who often, they can have a child and be separate from the man, right? Men, I think you're seeing more commonly are isolated from family, are isolated for having a child versus a lot of women in their 30s are saying, I'm not married. I want to have a kid. I'm going to go adopt a kid or I'm going to participate in IVF.
I mean, I buy that as far as it goes. I think here's the difference. Women, when they reach a certain age at least, but actually you look at just about every poll. I've talked about this before, but this documentary I'm working on, the sort of intro to the doc shows that at every age, women's unhappiness level is higher than it's ever been.
Yeah.
Whether it's teenage girls, millennial girls, middle-aged women, their unhappiness level is super high. For men, it's actually sort of the same.
Oh,
and here's why I think that is. It's not that men are living more fulfilling lives. It's that men are, well, for one thing, they're less introspective. So the guy, here's the thing. The guy in his basement or in his parents' basement watching porn and playing video games thinks, am I okay? Yeah. Oh, I'm good enough.
Right.
It's okay. Whereas we look at that and say, no, you're not, buddy. No, you're not. You're not doing well. But the unhappiness level. So, yes, on one hand, the sexual revolution has annihilated everybody. Okay.
Right.
Men, women, children. I think the realization of what it has done is not quite as there. Now,
women
of course,
have realized more so is what you're saying.
Yeah. Now, on one hand, in the movie, we talk about how the pill made women obsolete. You basically put yourself out of existence because we don't really need the fertility aspect, which is what makes women distinct in many ways. But it's also annihilated men. Dr. Benjamin Weicker talks about how we've basically created a zombie class of porn-addicted, unproductive men who they make enough money doing whatever it is they do to buy beer and video games. And again, I know that's a stereotype, but it's too true, unfortunately.
Right.
And the porn addiction has, I mean, devastated the male species, all right? Devastated. So, yes, are men not motivated to go out and be a courageous person who is attractive to females? Yes, because they've got the porn and they've got enough beer.
Well, and we were talking in the last segment about how men lack purpose, and I was connecting the difference between femininity and masculinity and how men need to have that personal person element brought into the purpose. Women have an easier time clasping on to other people. Men see systems more and processes, which is why, you know, you talk about the introspection. Women, you know, are more so, you know, reflecting on what's happening. Men not as much so to that extent about that person to person element. So when you take that and you implement pornography, while sex used to be somewhat of a motivation, that purpose of providing, now pornography, they're able, I mean, we have people like John Mayer, for example, and look at all of his girlfriends, Jennifer Aniston, Jessica Simpson have been some of them, and yet he'd actually prefer pornography. He's perfectly fine with getting his satisfaction out of pornography rather than women, right? And it's just so sad. I mean, young boys don't even realize, I mean, it's creating erectile dysfunctions, it's creating performance and sex later on. And no one's talking about these very frank things where pornography is having a huge impact on the daily lives of these young men.
Yeah, it's killing the men. It's killing the relationships that they were made for, right? It's killing love. You're right. You have, in Japan, for example, you have several generations now where you have like 35-year-old males who've never actually been with a woman and have no intention to. Maybe they've got the robot. They've got a lot of porn, certainly. But you have, if you want to see what the sexual revolution does, even like one more generation down the road, just look at Japan. And it has, I mean, it's devastating on every level. So don't think, you know, I read it just as a little side note here. I read one of the saddest stories I've read in a while. I think it was in the New Yorker about a young lady. She's early 20s, but she tells of this experience where she went and flirted with this guy who was selling her popcorn at the movie theater. 30-something-year-old guy. Not that attractive, but she flirted with him. And this is a long-form essay. Eventually, after some texts and some more flirtations, they end up in his place. having sex. And she gets in there, and sorry to be frank, but she gets in there, they get all naked. She decides, oh, I'm not really attracted to this guy at all. But now what? Well, it's sort of like, I've put this time in, he's put this time in, I don't want to have sex right now, but I'm going to do it. So she goes through with it, not what we would, consensual but not consensual, right? And then, and now, this is the one where he actually kept texting her and wants a relationship. She's repelled by him, and I'm sure embarrassed that she had sex with him. And now she's ravaging him in the pages of the New Yorker. You think,
oh, no.
Well, and it was her seventh. She talks, but I haven't actually even had sex with that many. It's only my seventh, and she's like 20 years old. This is a picture of what the sexual revolution has done. You're a mess, miss. You're a mess. You're not attractive to anybody. He's a mess. This now, not only is he unable to have a relationship even when he wants one, but now he's getting ravaged by people in the New Yorker, right? And it's like, can we just stop, right? Just calm down for just, think about this.
Or when your conscience kicks in, when you have even a slight level of doubt, when you have any reservation, this is, I think, something we live in a time of constant productivity and at the same time, constant laziness, right? And finding the balance of going, it's okay and good to slow down so that I can even just think through the decisions that I'm making and just life and the circumstances are happening so quickly. You know, before we forget, I want to bump over to this Facebook Live question that just came in. For those who don't participate, always feel free to hop on Facebook Live or watch the shows after. She says, I have two boys, toddlers, and I'm concerned about how we're encouraging them and for what. She said, should I discourage them for wanting to play cowboys and police and putting bad guys in jail? Should I don't want to encourage violence, but it's just something that boys tend to get excited about? So she says, playing police and all of those elements. What are your thoughts on what kind of play for little ones?
Yeah, this is an excellent question. It's not the violence that is the issue. It's justice that is the issue. Okay, and this is something that confuses a lot of people. They seem to think that we don't naturally understand the difference between unjust violence and just violence. But we actually do. Kids have a very strong innate sense generally. And what you'll see in the kids' play, I suspect, unless they're sociopaths, and I almost guarantee they're not, here's what you'll see in the kids' play. The bad guy will get his, and the good guy will win.
Right.
Somebody will do something wrong, and I'm going to go get him. Maybe I'll shoot him. I don't know.
Right.
But that's the key. That's the issue. It's not the violence per se. It's whether or not the good guys are winning. What we tend to do as a culture is try to hammer that whole notion that there are good guys out of them, which is so sad.
Well, and that's what's so important about what movies we're watching. The kids will always understand naturally, usually, that good light has to triumph over darkness. That's why, what stories are they seeing? Whether it's Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, or whatever Disney TV show, is good triumphing over evil? Or are we saying that, oh, the bad guys aren't so bad and they can win too and we should celebrate that? That's where I think we have to be careful. There's a difference between character development and celebrating the people that are doing bad things.
That's the most insidious part about most new stories, unfortunately, is Disney has a whole line about the kids of the villains. They're celebrating songs like it's good to be bad. You know, it's really a mind-bending thing because it's like, hold on, that's a bad guy. That's the villain. Why am I cheering for him?
Mm-hmm.
That's the bigger issue. It's not the violence. You're not celebrating violence by having the good guy win, by arresting the bad guy or even shooting the bad guy or beating him up. That's not the issue. If it's just violence for the sake of violence, okay, yes. We don't want that, right? Of course. But that's not usually what kids do, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
That comes later on when they've had sort of the righteousness hammered out of them. And we can't, you know, talk about, you know, the white hats versus the black hats because, you know, no, keep that. The good guys and the bad guys, let them play. Let them fight it out. That'll be okay in the end.
And I think,
slay the dragons.
Right. And you know, and you'll see elements, I think, usually with little boys when the violence becomes too much or they actually do start fighting rather than play fighting. You know, there are moments where you notice you will need to intervene. But again, being aware, you know, helping them to understand, maybe even just reading good classic stories at bedtime of good triumphing over evil, forming their consciences, seeing good ways to fight bad guys.
And I'll probably get in trouble for this one, but, spanking, of course, is out of vogue these days because everybody thinks it's, quote, violent. But here's the thing that kids understand with spanking. If it's done in love and it's done for something they did wrong, they understand that and it will correct their behavior. If it's done in violence, if you're just a jerk parent and you're hitting your kid, they understand that too. But those are different things. Okay. Those are different things. And the proverb about sparing the rod, it understands that too. So I just want to, there's a difference between violence for the sake of violence and righteous implementation of discipline. It's okay to do the former.
Awesome.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
We've just been talking about masculinity and femininity and what to do as parents if our boys are out there playing cops and robbers or all of those things. Well, one of the things we suggested before the break was providing good reading material, great stories. Mm-hmm. And may I suggest that you get two magazines in your house. One's called Radiant, one's called Valiant. They are a celebration of Catholic femininity and Catholic masculinity. They're friends of the show. They're sponsors. Go to radiant.osv.com. or valiant.osv.com, and please get yourself a subscription.
I was giggling as we were coming back in because I was reading one of the comments from Beth, who asked the question about boys and playing games like cowboys and Indians, and she said, haha, we spank and then hug and talk about it, which I thought was good, helping the kids sometimes talk through things. Maybe your kid needs to have things explained to them. But another couple of tips, one of them actually from my mom. My mom loves Facebook Live, by the way, so shout out to her. But she taught me this, and she repeated it in a comment here. She's a huge fan of Dennis Prager, and she said that he had taught, read 4 pages a day. Even if that's all you read, then at least you usually, on average, end up making it through about 4 books a year. So even if that's maybe right before you're going to bed, you slide it in there. Another kind of fun moment from Facebook Live, I heard someone talking about, I have a hard time reading because I'm distracted by shows like this one and others that I would like to catch live. That's where I myself know I have to kind of filter how much content am I consuming and when am I actually allowing my brain to work with the content as well. And you don't have to, although this isn't the case about Trending, you don't have to catch every episode of everything as well. It just becomes a chore then.
Yeah, there's just way too much information to try to listen and watch and read everything. So,
right.
Yeah, we do have to be a little bit discerning. I mean, yes, make sure you listen to every episode of this show.
And rate the show on iTunes so other people can find it, or share on Facebook.
All right. New Year's resolutions probably next show, but we talked about reading already, which is a good one. And here's another one. How about we stop gossiping in the new year? And the National Catholic Register has some tips to help us stop gossiping. Before we get to those, I don't know where this quote came from. On the internet, it's attributed to about 10,000 different people, Aristotle to Eleanor Roosevelt. But it says this: great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, and small minds discuss people. And I've kept that quote with me for many years. I do think that that's a valuable insight. Now, can we discuss ideas with every person we meet? Probably not. I mean, one of the reasons, though, that we discuss events and people, I think, is that, one, we're not willing to try to delve into the ideas, but two, we're just sort of lazy, and it's easy to interact with people based on a third person that we know. And so I think one of the reasons we gossip is one of the same reasons we talk about the weather. Is like, all right, I'm looking for something to connect with you.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the same lives, but how can we, you know, in order to have a conversation, we need to connect on something, and you don't watch sports or whatever, and the weather's boring. So, oh, did you hear about this person? So there's that. I do think we just need to be a little bit more, like, strenuous, perhaps. Be a little bit more strenuous in our conversational goals.
Right.
Just as a start to this whole gossip topic, if you will.
Right. And I'm going to throw out here, this isn't in this article, and I'll be sure I tweet all the links out to what we talk about. This isn't in there, but my big thing is be okay with silence, whether it's you're not sure what to talk about or gossip. Sometimes you just don't have to say anything. Or, you know, if you don't have something good to talk about, allow your mind to think about different things. And then as your mind is working, something will come up, even if it's a few minutes or maybe even an hour of silence of being in someone's presence.
And this is another one that wasn't in there. But when I think about gossip, I think oftentimes there's a serious pride issue that's involved, that the reason you're talking about somebody else is to put them down. And the only reason really to put them down is to exalt yourself, particularly exalt yourself in the face of whoever you're talking to. And so some serious vice is happening when we gossip. And so all of that sort of to say why it's wrong, why we should avoid it. Here's some tips as to actually like practically how to avoid it.
Right. So one of them is believe nobody and believe everybody. So, you know, don't believe absolutely that what someone's saying is true, but also recognize to them it is true. And so while you shouldn't just shut down what someone's saying, I mean, maybe you should based on what they're saying, you know, recognize that there really are two sides to every story. And I can give you a good example. Someone not too long ago, within the last year, was really gossiping hard about a divorced couple within the extended family. And I finally just said, wow, like there's this villainization taking place with the other person. But the reality is that that spouse probably doesn't smell like roses either. And I'm sure the other has a side as well. Maybe we just shouldn't talk about it. And their response to me was, well, you don't know the details. In my mind thinking, I don't. I shouldn't. We shouldn't. This is their business, unfortunately. But we're demonizing another person when there are two sides to that story.
Yeah, that actually goes with the second point here in this article, which is gather all the facts. You're right. You don't know the whole story.
Right.
You're likely not to know the whole story, and you can't really take anybody's word for it, and they probably don't know the whole story. So find out what really happened from as many people as possible. That's key, too. You can't just take that one person and say, all right, I know the whole thing. Gather it from many sides, because that goes with the first point.
Right.
Many different perspectives are going to be needed to really get at the root of this.
But only if it's something that you need to know.
Yeah,
most of
the
time, we don't need to know, and you need to move past it. And I think maybe, at least for me as a woman, I think it's sometimes harder for us. We dwell on things, and for me, sometimes it becomes a puzzle piece. It's not my business. Move on. Only gather the information if you, for some reason, need to take action. And maybe the judgment of a friendship, the character of a friendship, or one of those elements. But the reality is, most of the time, you need to kind of end that conversation. We'll get to that in a bit.
Now, did you just say maybe it's you because you're a woman? Did I hear that? Did you say what?
I dwell on things a little more.
We should probably just
touch
throw this out
that.
There because, I mean, part of the reason I do think that guys don't gossip as much, and here's the part of the thing is we just don't care.
Yeah, and we think about
we're
it more
like,
though.
Whatever, whatever. Oh, they're okay. Whatever.
It gets back to this. I blow people's minds. Don, can you sit at a wall and literally just think about the wall?
No, I can't think about nothing. But I also there's a lot of things I'm not going to think about because I'm like,
okay,
I'm not giving you two more seconds of thought on that.
But can you just sit and like, say you're trying to fix this charger? Can you just sit there and fix a charger and only think about the charger?
Oh, sure. I can focus on one thing. Yeah.
I see women's brains very rarely could just stop and think about one thing.
Yeah,
it goes
right.
Boop, 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 boop all over. And it is flowing and the ideas and the connection. Who knows how you got there sometimes?
That's true. How about this one? Give everyone the benefit of the doubt. Believe the best, not the worst. That's good advice.
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. And here's another one. Shut up. Seriously, shut up. And I remember there was a event I went back to a couple years ago, and it was a group of friends getting together after college. We hadn't seen each other in a while. And some of the people in the group really just started going to town on some people. And I remember sitting there like feeling really uncomfortable, and it was like a group participation. And I'm just sitting here going, oh my gosh, what I'm hearing right now, I'm so sad and upset. But I didn't know what to do, and I kind of just sat there. And I remember after I was talking to another friend, and they're saying, I don't want to hang out with them anymore. They're so stuck in the past and just talking about other people. Like, I remember they said, I feel dirty from having been around this. And that's where, you know, challenge other people to be better, even if it's a group setting or one-on-one, you know, maybe we just shouldn't be talking about this.
Here's the quote from the article. They suggest, sometimes, maybe not every time, say, what you're telling me is filthy, destructive gossip. I refuse to believe it, and I think you should keep your mouth shut. I'm not sure if that's going to go over very well, but, you know, maybe sometimes, maybe sometimes. Here's a big one. You pray for the persons involved.
I remember something was happening. I think it was someone I was, like, having a hard time in interacting with, and I was talking to the priest, like, I'm getting so frustrated, and I keep thinking about this person. It's making me so angry, this situation. I remember Father said, maybe there's a reason this person is on your mind. Maybe you are being called to pray for them right now. And maybe, just maybe, you know, our desire to dwell on something is an invitation by God to have compassion for their situation and intercede for them before Him.
Absolutely. All right. This is the last show of the year. So before we end, let me remind you that we are 100% listener supported. You can always make a tax deductible donation to support the show and also all the other projects that we do at Don Johnson Evangelistic Ministries, including Make My New Movie on the Sexual Revolution. We still need some funds for that. Please go to DonJohnsonMinistries.org and support that before the end of the year. Also, we're taking bookings for next year. Tim Marie travels around and speaks. So do I. Please go to TimMarie.com. Mm-hmm. Very easy to use contact info there. And DonJohnsonMinistries.org. Happy New Year, Tim Marie.
Happy New Year.
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Tim Marie. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Tim Marie Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit DonJohnsonMinistries.org or TimMarie.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.